Oddish fans, we have, I'm going to call her Wonder Woman. We have Amber Schroeder as our guest today, and I am so incredibly honored. I met Amber at the first Osmosis in 2015.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, Amber, even though we're going to get to the Wonder Woman, we're going to start with a speed round. When I say fraud, what do you think of?
Oh, money.
Ooh, okay. Mm-hmm. Ethics.
No, sadly, money. No, just kidding. Lacking, probably.
Lacking. Okay. And then this one, I'm going to change the question a little bit. I usually say, who makes a better embezzler, men or women? I want to say, who makes a better cyber criminal, men or women?
I actually think women do, but I don't think they get caught. And that's why they're better. I think the men get caught.
Yeah. Hashtag never underestimate Gladys. and that's funny because you have, and you guys can't see it, but The Art of Investigation Revisited, Amber's chapter, which you got to get the book, guys, chapter 9, adaptability. And you have a thing in there about a persona for suspects. So in my persona is Gladys.
Nice.
Do you have a name for yours?
I do. I have multiple names because at this point, I have like my good and bad ones and they flip back and forth because they're my live sock puppets. Like they're so alive. They've been alive for like 10 years plus. Some of them might be considering retiring. I don't know, but I treat them like real people. I almost feel a little schizophrenic when I think of all the personas out there.
Oh my God. Like Sybil.
Mm-hmm. My staff jokes. They're like, hang on. I don't remember who I was responding to as who. So give me a minute. They're like, oh, there's Sybil again. I actually thought I should probably call one Sybil.
Oh, yeah. You could start a new one and call her Sybil.
I might have to do that.
Oh, good idea. Okay. So Amber, give the audience like your elevator speech as to what you do and how you got there, because it's fascinating.
So I am a digital forensic investigator. Typically I specialize in smartphones, but I obviously can do computers and things like that. But I got there because when I was a teenager, I got hired by a company and they were doing password recovery. So they were doing cryptography and we got into a case and they had given up and I said, hey, can I do some research on this? And, because I'm dyslexic, I do everything backwards. And so going through and doing the forensic process is literally doing everything backwards in an investigation. And I started kind of reverse engineering the aspects of this person and figuring out what they would do, different things like that. I actually hung out in forums because this tells you the age of the internet at the time and put together a massive list. And that's what ended up breaking their password. Was all that personalized kind of OSINT investigation side that I didn't realize was OSINT back in the day because I was 14 and adding it into the digital forensic side with the cryptography and the breaking of the password. And it all worked out. I actually put someone away for a very long time for horrible things they were doing.
Oh yeah. Okay. And then you guys, we talked way before this recording for so long, but it is your 25th anniversary in business, isn't it?
It is. I founded my company back again, I was younger, but it's always interesting because 25 years in a technology company, because part of being a digital forensic investigator, the aspect that I like to do is I love making tools that solve problems. So that's part of what we focus on at Paraben is doing that. And then doing that for 25 years, I really feel like it was making that impact. That's where that Wonder Woman side comes in. And I could break into the whole song, just so you know, I know the whole song. But it's finding the truth in a one and a zero was so rewarding to me because I knew that if someone legitimately did not do it, it was going to get proved in that data. And it made such an impact to me where some of the other forensic sciences felt very arbitrary. Like, maybe this happened, maybe this splatter meant this, whatever it meant. But I'm like, no, this is the email was sent or it was not sent. It's black and white. It's in the binary. So I like that.
I love that. And the patterns, because so this happened a long, long time ago when I was working at the sheriff's office. There is a guy in like Vancouver, BC, and it was geo-profiling. So like a serial murderer or rapist, they think they're going outside of their geography, but they really aren't. Patterns are so incredibly important.
Very. And there's patterns in not only behavior, but those patterns then show up into our data as well. And it's interesting because people have those moments that's like, are you one of those people that the first thing you do in the morning, you turn off your alarm, then you pop into social media, you'll find that habitual pattern. And when that changes, something disrupted it, you know, or a company will have a whole bunch of records and all of a sudden one day's missing. Why is one day missing? They all should be there. You see a pattern of 100 times before and 100 times after that one day missing tells me there's some intent. All of those patterns come in into play and it's fantastic. I love that. Patterns make me happy.
Patterns make you happy.
They do.
I think I have this right. You developed the Faraday bag. Is that correct?
I did. I think it's because I have sewing skills. This is a shout out to Utah because everyone there knew how to sew. I don't know. My mom taught me how to sew. So did home ec back when there was home ec. But I was sitting in a big theater out in DC and they were talking about a man working on high power lines. And I was like, how is he not getting electrocuted? That's crazy. And I've never taken a physics class. But all that physics happened in that moment, man. I pulled out the notebook out of my purse and I started drawing up designs saying, if they could do that to block electrical signals from electrocuting him, then I could block it from hitting cell phones. Because otherwise, if you don't block the signal to a phone, you're doing a wiretap because it's still receiving data after you've taken possession of it. And I'm like, I need to make these bags and drew up all these things, filed for my patent and got my patent. But man, the first couple prototypes, I was like a stapler with mesh from Home Depot and all these things. And eventually got it down to something that doesn't rip up your hands and still blocks all your signals. So.
Oh my God. Do kids hate you for doing this?
They should. No. But when my kids started driving, I did make them put their phones in a Faraday bag. They had 6 months as they were getting familiar with being an individual driver on the road that I'm like, no phone. And they're like, I'll just put it in the trunk. I said, that is not reliable. I said, you'll hear it ring back there and get distracted. And then you'll want to check it. So I said, you're going to drop it in a Faraday bag. When you get out, take it out of the bag and you can get signal again.
I think I want a pink Faraday bag because so much pink stuff. I want a pink one.
Kind of styling.
Yeah, very much styling. So, so you've been, how many times have you spoken at Osmosis? Every year?
Not every year. I do speak there often because I love that audience and I usually try to have a good new topic to give them a new perspective that maybe something they haven't heard of before. I try to submit with that. I'm submitting because I haven't been accepted or anything, but I had an injury earlier in the year where I broke my ankle. And so I started taking pictures of my injury because I'm like, okay, let's document the healing thing. And I said, holy crap, I'm going to start an OnlyFans page for injured feet. Because why wouldn't you? And simply to see how that type of social network, because it really is a social network of a type, how do they interact and deal with their data? Because I had to have something people would actually want to look at and interact like normal. Sometimes when you test the patterns in the people, if you make it too testy, it doesn't work. People don't, they say, oh, this is fake or it's trying to lure me, whatever it may be. I'm like, this is all legitimate. Sad pictures of my injured ankle that we will see how people interact. What does it do to get to a transaction or what are people doing within this environment? I think that's valuable research. So I like to share it.
Ah, that's awesome. That is very, very cool. And I would have to say I've never been on OnlyFans. So
I haven't either. That's why.
One of my favorite places to go is Reddit. What do you think about Reddit now that especially it's gone public?
So Reddit for me, who is also, I also dyslexic and ADHD here. So I get both and OCD. I have a lot of different acronyms with my name. I like it for what it draws people in because it's a different type of social network. But from an investigative standpoint, it's actually very difficult because it doesn't keep data the same way that some of the others do because it's really a stream. It's not individual stores. So for me as a forensic person, I find that more difficult to collect the data from it. That's when you go in as the OSINT skills, but then at the other side, you can't see 100% scope of a constantly running stream of information. So I think that's been a difficult side of it in an investigation.
Different way. I love Reddit.
Reddit's noisy to my brain, so I can't enjoy it as a person. but I look at it from the investigative. I can't also do Slack, just so you know. That also is extremely noisy to my brain. And I'm like, I cannot adopt Slack. It is too much.
So are you familiar with Daniel Kahneman, who just passed? He won the Nobel. He's started behavioral science, behavioral economics.
No.
He has a book called Noise. You gotta get it.
I have to get that. Yeah, because I literally have those times where I'm like, I'm not a white noise person because it actually keeps my brain active. And I'm like, it has to shut up. I need to get some sleep.
Yeah. Yeah. And it. So that's interesting. Okay. Noise.
I will
book.
Have to I'm look that see. One up. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So what else on the phones? So I'm taking this organizing class online. It's just like a group. And it's like once a week we meet for an hour and you kind of just work with stuff. So it's kind of an accountability thing. But one of the questions a lot of people have is the phone. Like how best to use it. So how many phones do you have, Amber?
So I have one phone that is mine. And then every one of my personas has a phone as well.
And
so there's literally a pile of phones. No, I am an Android user for me personally, but my personas, I have a mix of iPhones and Androids for each one of them. But that's how they stay alive for so long.
Okay, interesting. So you prefer Android?
I do prefer Android.
The green bubble versus the blue bubble?
I know. People are like, what? I don't understand. So the problem I have with iOS and Apple in general is I have to live within their fences. So I'm like, I'm not a fan of your fences. And the other side of it is me being in your fences gives you access to all of my data. And I don't love that. So I chose Android where I can say, well, I don't want a fence right here. I want it over here. And I'm willing to give you this data or this data. I feel like I get a lot more choice with Android. And so I've always been on Android for that.
Okay. So that's interesting because you're so technically proficient. Most people, my son went through a period where he wanted a Droid. So I was like, oh, fine. Give him a. It didn't even last a year. And my reason was about like in the App Store, I feel that Apple is a lot safer, but that's because most people don't know how to do fences. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's some of it. But with Google Play, they authenticate all of the apps. The app process has improved immensely through the years. So what they do for the verification and how they actually sandbox the controls within the different apps. I always tell everyone, whether you're an investigator or even just anyone in a professional field, you have to be familiar with both of them. You can't be so Apple-centric that you could look at an Android and be like, I don't even know how to make a phone call, because that's crazy. We're all in technology. It's like you have to be familiar with both of them. I actually converted, I feel this is a big deal. I converted my husband off of Apple into Android and he's never gone back. Because I asked him, I said, do you really want all of your data with Apple? And he was a Mac user, everything. And he dropped that as an operating system for his computer and as his phone. And now he runs Linux and he runs Android.
Oh, how long did that take though?
He was switched after 3 months.
Oh, really?
Yep. He's like the speed, the optimization. His biggest joy in life is copying data. It's a crazy thing. He just loves moving data from one place to another. He has probably a gazillion backups. Like he loves backing up data. He's always worried he'll lose something and he streamlined his whole process.
Okay. So not to get too personal, but your husband's in cyber too.
Yes.
Did you meet? Because you said you've never worked together, but did you meet via cyber?
We met in cyber. Yep.
Okay. Nope,
it was one of those that I think he attended one of my lectures, believe it or not.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yes. And then he followed up with a mutual friend of ours and he got some help with a project he was working on. And I knew all about it. It was about smartphones and that led to everything else. So you never know. We're both obviously super big nerds. It's just nerd world for us all the time.
Oh my God. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, I have, you know, my Apple phone, but I feel like I probably only use 1% of its capabilities.
I think most people don't use a huge percentage of what that smartphone is capable of. I always joke that my smartphone has more power in it than any of probably the first 5 computers I owned. It definitely has more storage. My phone's got a terabyte of storage on it. And it's like, this is just crazy. When I think of like, when I started, it was big to have like a 500 megabyte drive. and how expensive that was. It was like, that was like money to be that. You walked around, you're like, you're a baller for having that amount of storage on your computer. And now it's just silly to not think that I have a terabyte on my computer. I have a terabyte on my phone, plus all my cloud storage. It's ridiculous. And I think that's impactful for investigators, no matter what they do. Our digital fingerprint has grown so large. It's not about recovering data anymore because we don't ever fill up the space. It's all just sitting there. No one cares if they delete it. It's like, oh, I got so much more space. I'm just going to put more. We're like hoarders.
Yeah. Oh, God. This organizing class I'm taking, it's like, it forces you, because it's once a week for an hour, that I have to clean stuff up.
That's good.
It's really, really good. So the other thing, and because you're way more into this, is like, it's hard being a criminal these days with a smartphone, don't you think?
I think it is, isn't. Ugh. So I think criminals have more capabilities than they did before. So you can pop into your local Walmart, pick up a smartphone, get a 30-day phone number for it, and get going. And I think the thing that they're making the mistake on is that when they decide to mix their criminal persona with their real persona, that's when we start getting to have those issues. But phones are a lot more affordable. I can't imagine anywhere that actually doesn't have Wi-Fi now. I live in rural America and I have multiple lines of fiber going to different parts of my property, and for so cheap. It's amazing. So I don't know. I don't think it's harder. I think the thing that's happened is people have gotten less creative. That's a generational shift.
Okay. So that's like, say that someone wanted to go out and, like, I don't know, leave a bag of dog turd on someone's house, front doorstep. Made them
go into the 80s. Absolutely. Light it on fire. Yep. Whole thing.
Yep. Uh-huh. There isn't like a dog turd like delivery service. There literally is a dog turd.
Yes, there is. It's sad, isn't it?
But like, okay. So say I get in my car, tracks me.
Yep.
And okay, I'm a smart criminal, so I'm just going to leave my phone at home. And you're like, so, you know, we only catch the dumb ones. So I'm going to say I'm the dumb one. I'm going to leave my phone at home, so no one knows that I drove to so-and-so's house and I left a pile of dog turd on their house. But you've got like, you know, do you go and rent a car?
Right.
Like, I mean, I kind of feel like in order to do maybe sort of lower level crimes these days, it's harder because the data shows what you've done.
Yeah. You're getting to the point now where we're seeing the emergence of AI, where people are going to employ that in their shop or in their algorithm that you bought your dog turd from, that then put it over there that says, well, I know you were at this location and the distance to get there is 3 miles. So I'm going to charge you per mile because I have to collect local dog turd because you've requested that, you know, whatever it may be. And all that gets compiled, but it gets tagged to you. And that's maybe what's going to be a problem. AI is changing so much right now. I'm waiting for the old movie Minority Report, because it definitely feels like that when you shop online. So if I ever want to do research, I'll use Chrome. I'll Google it. Then I'll wait. And then the next day, I'll go into my social networks and see what the social networks have then refined out of my Google search to tell me are the top providers of whatever. Because they're paying for ads to be in my social network. And then I continue my research from there. It's how I buy, you know, the best stove for my house or whatever it may be. All of that research, I'm like, it's all done for me now in the back end. I used to have to do that manually.
Yeah. Okay. So that's so funny because I just had on my list AI next.
Yeah.
So yeah, okay. Well, AI podcast. Do you listen to any podcasts about AI?
I don't listen to them about AI. I have started, so I'm not the best podcast listener because, again, my brain gets full and it starts going off into crazy directions. So I try at least twice a week to listen to a podcast as I eat lunch and be like, it's like having lunch with a person almost. But I try to pick it in different topics that I might not always look at. I do the same thing when I buy a magazine, which I know sounds so antiquated. I'll walk through an airport and I'll be like, I'm going to pick up this magazine on this bizarre fishing topic I know nothing about, just to kind of get my brain other things besides cyber to look at. But I haven't listened to any about AI because I don't think they know what they're doing either.
So I would recommend Hard Fork.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like Hard Fork. It's with Kevin Roos and Casey Newton. And Casey Newton is a Kara Swisher. Well, he used to rent a house from her, but he does the platformer Substack. It comes out every Friday. I'm not a huge tech person, but I really like Hard Fork.
Okay. I wrote it down.
Okay. I think it's a really, really good one for technology. And they have done So,
oh, no, that's excellent.
As far as magazines, do you read Wired?
I do not often read Wired.
I love it this is so funny, for the shopping. I think they have some really good.
That, yes, absolutely. They're like the Better Homes and Gardens for nerds.
And I've bought stuff based on their little shopping section. And then like this month, or it's this last month, they have the CEO of NVIDIA.
Oh, nice.
And he actually went to Oregon State University. So I wanted to read about him. So I really like Wired. A colleague gave it to me a long, long time ago for a birthday present. And now I get it all the time. I get it on my own because I enjoy it. And I'm not a nerd like you, Amber, but
I get a lot of things in my inbox from like the Hacker subscription to different things like that. And I see always who puts out, like, there was obviously a big Windows update that just got pushed out over the last 24 hours and what its impact was and things like that. And I peruse through a lot of it, but I do limit to my nerd cyber side to business hours, if that makes sense, because it gets full. One of the biggest things you have is if you over inform yourself from all these different things, you're going to lose a little bit of that creativity that I think is super important, especially as an investigator, because you're going to be like, oh no, I have to follow this path that someone's already discovered. It's like, no, find your own path to it, because you never know until you experiment and try.
Well, that's part of your chapter of adaptability.
I'm a big advocate of both sides of my brain being happy. So,
well, if you give a problem to five different people, and you're going to get five different ways.
Yep, absolutely. Unless they all read the same stuff, and then they're all going to just rinse and repeat. And it's funny, you know, in software design, I don't run my competitors' tools and things like that, because I don't want to lose that aspect of how I'm seeing the problem that might be a different way of solving it than someone else's way of solving it. And I think that's important for everybody.
So you said earlier in the podcast about black and white, and I'm all about gray. Like, I mean, for people, but data people, being black and white. So when does gray come into your world?
Gray comes in a lot more often, and it does from the people. When you look at the binary black and white of something, was this email sent? Was this not sent? Was this picture downloaded? Was it not downloaded? It doesn't ever tell you what the intent was behind it. And that's the gray. That's what's so hard to determine of, like, okay, were you doing this because it was a malicious attack against this other person and that's what ended up happening? Or you just happened to download the same thing that was sent to 100 other people, but it didn't come from you. That's the hardest part of anything. And I think that's why, like, the personas we make and our sock puppets we keep become so critical, because we get to experience all these other spaces as those personas we design. You know, my personas are not nerds. They're not like me, because I already know what that experience is like. They're totally different interests, totally different people. And because of that, it makes it so I'm like, okay, this is how Reddit would interact with someone who's a cat lover. I'm a dog lover. You know, those little things, it will change the way the data feels. And that feeling part of data, which I know sounds absolutely crazy, is gray.
No, I love that. I really, the gray equaling the intent, I really love that.
I think this is where we're going to see a big change for people, because the intent, so we're going back to AI because I'm circling here, but the intent comes in differently when AI generates the data. That gray totally changes.
Well, yeah. And like, okay. So have you found a good AI class for investigators?
I have not. And I think it's because it's still too early. I know everyone's like, but it's been around for like a year. That's not very long for tech. The fact that they're just integrating AI directly into your operating system. I had a moment the other day when I'm like booting up my Windows 11 and I'm like, hey, what's going on over there? What you thinking? What you doing? And I'm like, oh, look at that. You're thinking all by yourself now. I think there isn't an expert on it because it's still thinking. It's still generating. We created a generative AI platform that's to run with our software. And we were doing the preliminary things with open source. But we realized after we did that, it's dumb. It just hasn't learned anything yet. And trying to teach it is, it's a long, arduous process of, it's almost like raising a child. You're like, wash your hands before you eat. What were you thinking? That's so obvious. And the AI is like, I had no idea. Now I will wash my hands every time before I eat. You know, little things like that, that it's going to take it years to really be at the point that it's going to be able to fill in the blanks.
So you're all cyber. But mm-hmm. you said you lived in a rural place. We're not going to say where.
Right.
But like, I know people, like, I'm going to say I know of people who are just like, they're just kind of done with tech. They go off grid. Like, do you ever have dreams of like, just like, I'm going to drive over my phone. I'm going to like make jam. I'm going to raise animals.
That's the other side of my life. So I finished my cyber in my regular job. And then in the rest of the time, I'm an emerging entrepreneurial farmer because I think, you know, I got to know how to grow my own food. I need to know how the things that actually keep us alive, which is not cyber, work. And it's been a fantastic experience in the way my brain is thinking. But the other side of it is I brought cyber into farming. From designing electronic mechanisms that can tell me what my soil's molecular compost is, or is it too acidic? Is it not? Do I need to adjust something? Of course, I'm going to put it in Raspberry Pis and, you know, put it all over the farm for sensors. And, you know, is this one the best pasture for it, or camera setup for my animals, whatever it may be? I'm kind of integrating.
Well, no, so that's good because I just feel like there's more people and, you know, whether I've read it or I've heard it from people that are just like, and maybe it's an age thing too, is like, I'm just tired of the technology. But then they see the genius of being able to like, well, if I just put this sensor in my, you know, raised bed. And actually, I just read an article yesterday about Martha Stewart. She will only do raised beds. Now
I only do raised beds as well, minus my orchard, but that's different. But yeah, the rest of it's raised beds.
Yeah. And so they want to be off grid, yet they see that there's so much possibility with the tech that I don't think that they truly can go off grid because we've gotten lazy too. It's like, Siri, you know, tell me what the soil temperature is outside or something like that. Oh God, yes. My phone's now answering.
saying, hey, what's up? Yeah, no, it's like, okay, it's the old school farmer's almanac, but now you add that little bit of digital to it. And it's like, oh, that's a whole different moment. I look at my acreage and I did the math that says, okay, if I have a fertilizer spread by a manual tractor, it takes X amount of time, blah, 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 blah. But if I have it spread by a drone, it's X amount of time and all of a sudden it's much faster. And I said, if I had a drone rental service that other farmers could use, all of a sudden they're able to double their production because the fertilization process is much faster. And then it has an infrared camera that tells me if there's a hot spot in the field and maybe it needs more fertilizer. There's crazy stuff. Obviously, there's crazy farm stuff like that, that I'm like, if I can show that and help the agricultural side of life, then why wouldn't I? We all need food to live. So,
that's, oh my God,
it's a
hobby. So much
it's
fun.
Crazy hobbies.
No, but it's so much fun. So yeah. Like, yeah, I mean, you couldn't do this. I'm going to say even 50 years ago, my dad used to be a commodities trader and he specialized in agriculture. He had a friend he went to college with who was in the CIA. And this was back when there were only satellite picture, like, you know, satellite pictures were hard to come by. And he jokingly said, he's like, hey, can I see some of the satellite pictures of the wheat fields in Ukraine and Russia? And the guy's like, I'm going to have to like report that I've been approached to get satellite pictures. But now we can do it all the time.
You could totally do it all the time. You can even check out properties and their lines in Google Earth or Google Maps. Google Maps will show you all the property lines for people. And it's like, okay, if I'm looking at this land, how close is the next adjacent land? How close is the water? It's those little things that it's like, why wouldn't I want to use that? that's a fantastic mechanism for me to explore something else. There's always a sprinkle, I think, of digital and everything. Luckily, agriculturally, it hasn't had as many cyber attacks, which is nice, but that means it's just waiting for the next person to pick it up and realize that they can be impactful by doing that. We see more attacks associated with water and industrial control systems than you would see on actual agriculture.
Yeah. I have a friend who has a friend, and they could not believe when the friend was talking very vaguely, because, you know, obviously, about the amount of attacks on the infrastructure that people have not a clue as to.
Because they're running older systems, they haven't been updated. And I think we're also having a population age out of the ability to take control of those systems. You know, how many programmers do you know out there that know how to code in COBOL? It's like, it's an old language. Yeah, but it's an old language. It's like, no one's thinking of that now, but that's what those systems were designed on. So it's something we're all going to have to spend some time investing in and knowing what direction it's going to go, where you're going to see a lot more people try that off-grid method. I have my own well. I have my own septic. I'm really close to off-grid. I have a body of water by me, so I hopefully will get hydropower. And then I'm like set. I could survive the zombies. There's an apocalypse. I'm set.
Okay, but you're going to need insulin for your dog.
For my dog, yeah. I will need I can supplement some of that for a period of time, but sadly not for too long for her, but yeah.
The most romantic thing my husband ever, and Frottish fans, excuse me, but he ever said to me was, there's a movie and it's about like the zombie attack and how insulin is so incredibly important. And we used to live like 3/4 of a mile from a Walgreens. And he goes, if we have the zombie attack, I'm getting a gun. And my husband like maybe shot a gun 5 times in his life. And he goes, and I'm going to go down to Walgreens and get as much insulin as I can get. And I was like, that was like the most romantic
thing.
That was
very romantic. That's awesome. I'm hoping you can't hear all my crazy dogs in the background who are going nuts.
Oh my God. So, okay. Kind of like finishing this up. Like, okay. I do a class on fraud and pop culture. You mentioned the Minority Report. Is there any other movie or book out there that you would recommend to the audience about like what is going to happen or what has happened that you like?
There's actually a whole series, and I'm trying to remember who the author is. It's called Demon. And the reason I like that series in the cyber aspect of it, and it is, it's a 3-book series. I'm totally going to space it. I was actually given it in a meeting, the book, because it was a pre-release one. And they said, I think you'll really like this. And I read it and I was like, that was very technically accurate. I was really impressed because the author took the time to really understand network architecture and different things like that. But it really was about an emergence of an AI. And so I thought as a series, it's a fantastic series. It's not too nerdy, but it's just nerdy enough, which it's like, oh, that was fascinating. I'm very particular on what I read because I find my reading time to be precious time. Because you run out of time in the day. And then now I'm at that age that says I need to find a pair of glasses to read. What a pain. I'm like, my LASIK has failed me in my late 40s going, no, you need reading glasses all the time now. I have reading glasses, computer glasses, and you don't have a monitor glasses. So 3 different kinds.
Oh, my God. So have you read Kara Swisher's book, Burn? Or it's not, it's it, Burn something. It's about a tech love story.
I think I did read that one. Yeah.
Okay. So I really enjoyed it. I didn't think I would enjoy it as much as, and I'm not done with it, but I've really, really enjoyed that. So, do you have a favorite website? Like right now, one of my favorite websites is Reddit. I just, I love Reddit. Even though it's not a website.
Yeah, I know. I get it. I don't know if I have a favorite website right now. I was just dipping into all the non-social medias or non-traditional social medias, which I consider Reddit to be a non-traditional social media. I was in Quora and a couple of the others. And I'm trying to decide how that is so impactful. I'm like, is this just full of all the introverts that don't care if you like what they're saying? Or, you know, what's the impact of all of these ones versus, you know, oh, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Twitter, I'm on, you know, LinkedIn, you know, Insta, etc. it's been an interesting exploration. I have a couple of my personas going in there and I have them interact with each other to see how other people will interact with them. I just started the research, so I'm jumping in.
Oh, that's kind of fascinating. That's kind of fascinating. Well, Amber, I can't thank you enough. I know how busy you are. I love listening to you on Matt Spayer's PI Perspectives podcast. And it gave me, I'm reaching out to Amber and you're more than gracious. So,
Of course. I'm so happy to do this. I love this.
And I hope to see you in October at Osmosis with your new presentation.
Now we're just like, we're weighting it in my favor. We'll see what happens. No, just kidding. Yeah. If not, I am going to write something up or do a vlog about it, because who doesn't want to know how OnlyFans actually works without having to put yourself out there?
Yeah, no, it makes total sense. It makes total sense. So thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.